The big three automakers were back on Capitol Hill yesterday looking for $34 billion in loans should they get the money they're asking for. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 past 7 on this Friday, December the 5th. We'll talk about why the big three received a skeptical reception from Congress yesterday and whether their dire predictions will come true if the bailout money that they say they need isn't approved. The UAW's president also testified. Ron Gettelfinger predicted General Motors would go bankrupt before the end of the month.
Without such assistance, General Motors and Chrysler could run out of funds in the very near future and be forced to liquidate. The collapse of these companies would inevitably drag down numerous auto parts suppliers, which in turn could lead to the collapse of Ford.
So, do taxpayers have to come to the rescue of American automakers? Our guest this hour says, not so fast. A quick fix is not likely to be successful. Michael Schmidtke is a professor of economics at Washington and Lee University in Virginia, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
But without a quick fix, won't GM first go under?
There needs to be a Band-Aid, but it won't be a fix. I think we need to make that distinction. But, yes, they are burning through cash at an incredible rate, and because they've been pouring money into pension and health care funds for retirees over the past several years, they have much smaller cash reserves than, with hindsight, they should have been holding.
Oh, so clarify for us. You say you think they do need this Band-Aid loan, but much more after that?
The problems of the industry aren't just the problems of General Motors or General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. The industry is really very integrated from suppliers down through dealerships. There are many suppliers teetering on the brink. Sales have fallen by over 30%. Of the big six, which would be in order, General Motors, Ford, Toyota, Ford, Honda, Nissan, Chrysler, Nissan. The best news among them was Ford. Their sales only fell 30%. So if we look at the auto industry, it's not just the United States or NAFTA either. It's also Europe and Japan. Sales have dropped precipitously everywhere. And there are very few industries that could take a 40% decline in sales without having many firms run into problems, because you just don't plan for that sort of disaster.
Yeah. So this isn't because the big three were poorly managed?
There certainly are components of that. But many of the accusations against the big three are really rooted in the 1980s, when they were extremely poorly managed and not reflecting the 21st century. So I'm worried that because of the rapidity with which the rescue package was put together for Wall Street, that they're going to be, to use the acronym for that, they're going to be tarped and feathered and run out of town because of someone else's sins.
Yeah. So they were met, though, with lots of questions and skepticism and not a whole lot of support, even though they all three talked about trying to restructure, trying to build more fuel-efficient vehicles in the future, only accepting $1 in salary. It doesn't look like Congress is eager to bail them out.
Well, Congress should never be eager to do that sort of thing. But we are, unfortunately, in a fairly extraordinary situation right now. A bankruptcy today would be very different from a bankruptcy of a company when the economy overall is doing well. If General Motors had run out of cash in normal times and their fundamental business was healthy, then they could get bankruptcy financing and continue in operations and restructure the parts of the company that had insurmountable problems. But today, getting that sort of financing could be extraordinarily difficult. And if a couple large suppliers go down, the large suppliers supply everyone in the industry. Toyota, Honda, the whole works. Mm-hmm. And if they were forced to shut down because their problems, they fell apart too quickly, then the entire auto industry was shut down within about 48 hours. Because it really, the whole industry is very lean, very little inventory.
So you believe this $34 billion Band-Aid is needed and needed very, very soon?
The Band-Aid is needed. Whether $34 billion is the right way to go, I don't look at the numbers at that level of detail, much less have, I'm certainly not privy to internal financial information. The industry has lots of suppliers that are also in severe financial problems, and if a big supplier goes out, suppliers employ over twice as many manufacturing workers as does the assembly end of the industry. And then dealerships employ as much as the entire manufacturing end. So problems in one end are going to affect problems in the other end, and all three components have severe problems. So policies need to look at all three ends of the industry, and some of them are much more difficult to resolve than General Motors alone. Dealerships are extraordinarily well protected by franchise law that dates from the 19-teens and 1920s, and it's just extraordinarily difficult to shut a franchise down. General Motors can't say, we've got 1,500, 2,000 dealers we don't need, goodbye, without some extraordinary set of legal changes. There's just no way to do that. And so dealerships are bleeding money and will be failing in large numbers. And again, suppliers may need to get special treatment as well.
We're going to check weather, and then we'll talk more and welcome your questions for Michael Smitka, professor of economics at Washington and Lee University in Virginia, talking with us about the CEOs of the big three before Congress yesterday asking for the $34 billion in loans to keep them afloat. The big three will be back today testifying before a different congressional committee. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Friday, December the 5th. It's coming up on 19 minutes past 7 o'clock. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. After 4 o'clock, it's Your Views on the News, when you can call in with your thoughts about the week's top news story. We'll talk about the week's top news stories as well in our Week in Review after 8 o'clock this morning. Right now, we are talking about one of the top stories in the news this week. The CEOs of the big three car makers will be back on Capitol Hill today making their case for a $34 billion bailout, this time before a House committee. Lawmakers from both parties are urging the automakers to consider a pre-negotiated bankruptcy. Don't have a lot of details on that, but we'll ask our guest about it and welcome your thoughts on whether or not we need to bail out the automakers. Our guest says that a Band-Aid is needed, but it will take more than a quick fix bailout to make the big three and their suppliers and the dealerships viable in the future. Michael Smitka is professor of economics at Washington and Lee University in Virginia. And Professor Smitka, beyond the Band-Aid, what is going to be needed to save the American car industry?
In the short run, it looks like the industry is going to have extraordinary excess capacity because of the precipitous drop in sales. And sales were down 35% over the previous year. And that in an industry that has fairly high fixed costs up and down the chain is going to be hard to overcome. So unfortunately, I believe this will be a very deep and very long recession. So it's not quite clear how we can survive it. I'm a bit pessimistic at the moment.
Even if the company and labor gives up a lot in order to make things lean?
General Motors is paying health care for about 1 million Americans. So they have not only current employees, but they also have retirees and retirees' dependents. And this system was set up circa 1950, back when General Motors employed 440,000 people. So they haven't all been kind enough to die off quickly. So one of the things is that General Motors and Ford and Chrysler, unlike the airline industry, unlike Big Steel and numbers of other companies, have not used bankruptcy to renege on these obligations to their retirees. So that's a very large financial burden to them and to many other firms in the U.S., not just in the auto industry, not just the assembly end of the industry either.
Yeah. Well, if you say you're pessimistic about the long-term viability, why do the Band-Aid? Isn't that, as President Bush put it yesterday, throwing good money after bad?
Well, it's a small Band-Aid compared to Wall Street. And the implications of having the collapse of an industry that employs over 1 million people, since that would then lead to job losses in local communities, stores needing to lay off employees, hospitals that run into problems because none of their local people have insurance anymore, state local governments running into trouble, this would really amplify the impact of a recession to an extraordinary amount, and it would happen very quickly. So we would be buying a small amount of insurance at, compared to Wall Street, a very low price.
Let's take calls. Our lines are full. Lenny in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I agree with what he just said. My comment was going to be that having gotten a real close-up look at the auto industry, I used to haul car parts 30 years ago, and I know the industry has changed in 30 years, and because I'm very good with cars, I used to work on them, but getting to the point, I agree with what he said about $35 billion being a good insurance policy, because we are playing with fire, and if we let the auto industry go now, that's one more piece in the puzzle. That's one more major manufacturing component gone. Millions of people out of work. Millions of economies to scale that are going to fail. And we just can't allow that.
You agree, Professor Smitka?
Certainly. And I find it a bit disturbing that someone like Senator Shelby from Alabama should be the one making a really big fuss. Alabama, to entice Mercedes to set up a factory there, gave them $350 million for a single factory. And this wasn't loans. This was basically bribes to get them to go there. And then they've given additional money for other sorts of plants to move in. So he's someone who has thrown money at the industry with no strings attached. But when it's in someone else's state, he seems to be stepping back and saying, whoa. But I think he'd be quite surprised that the impact in Alabama would be large as well.
Yeah, Shelby said yesterday, among other things, these are not a serious set of plans. If you made this presentation to get a bank loan, I think any sensible banker would dismiss your request. Did the CEOs do a good job making their case yesterday or not?
I didn't have a chance to watch the hearings. I scanned some of the press coverage. They've had sales decline very, very suddenly by, on average, 35%. And coming up with some sort of rational way to respond to that in a short time period is quite difficult. They're trying to look down the road and ask how much further are sales going to fall? What level of sales do we actually have to plan for? And no one knows at this point. All we can see is that across the U.S., job losses are mounting, and that will then feed into lower car sales, and where the bottom will be is you know, I don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah. Chuck in Iola is our next caller. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't agree. I feel that the problem is not really with the car manufacturers, although I think they should have foresight to see what was the writing on the wall. I don't see how giving the money to the car manufacturers is going to increase sales. The money should be given, if to anybody, to the people to spark the economy. You know, that $700 billion to Wall Street, if that was divided between head of households in the U.S.,
well,
I think that would have done a lot to spark the economy.
Well, it didn't happen. Should the car makers then get this money or not?
I don't think so. I just don't agree with it. Who's going to bail me out? I own a small business. If the economy goes down and then people don't use my service, can I put my hand out and have the government hand me some money?
Yeah. Professor Smitka, what's the difference?
We certainly need a large stimulus package. Part of our problems are really a financial bubble where debt mounted across the economy. It wasn't just the housing sector that had bad loans. We're going to see lots of mergers and leveraged buyouts fail. We're going to see businesses that expanded because the money was just so cheap and banks were pushing it down their throat. But the difficulty is that some players have so immediate and large repercussions that giving them different treatment is appropriate. But there needs to be an effective bailout package for the entire economy. That's something that the new Congress and the new president will be looking at. But that will take 6 months to put together and another 6 months before the money really starts hitting in large amount. And then it's another 6 months before that starts leading to a stabilization of job declines and perhaps a recovery on the margin of jobs, and close to 2 years down the road to have a full impact. So it's very difficult administratively to go business by business to small businesses. We need this sort of bailout package for the entire economy. But if we have a large component of the economy fail precipitously, the need for such a bailout will be magnified tremendously. And the short-run pain that that will impose is something that really, it's a waste to have millions of people thrown out of work for no good reason.
We will talk more about the attempts by the automakers to get $34 billion in loans to keep them afloat. The CEOs of the Big Three will be back on Capitol Hill today before a House committee, yesterday before a Senate committee. They made their case for the money to some skepticism. We're talking with a guest about whether this bailout is needed now, what the implications will be, the consequences will be if it doesn't happen now, and talking some about the long-term viability of the auto industry in this country, and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Friday, December the 5th. The CEOs of the Big Three car makers will be back on Capitol Hill today. Yesterday, the CEOs of Chrysler and GM said they would run out of money soon without a bridge loan. Ford's CEO said Ford needed a line of credit in case one of the other two went under.
Ford is an American company and an American icon. We are woven into the fabric of every community that relies on our cars and trucks and the jobs our company supports. The entire Ford team, from our employees to shareholders, suppliers to dealers, is absolutely committed to implementing our new business model and becoming a lean, profitable company that builds the best cars and trucks on the road for our customers.
Can the big three survive? Do they need this bailout, the $34 billion in taxpayer-financed loans? What else do they need? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Michael Smitka, professor of economics at Washington and Lee University. And I'm wondering, Professor Smitka, if you have confidence that Ford, at least, can make this happen.
Well, different companies have very different positions. And I, quite frankly, can't give details of how Ford at the moment differs in their product lineup from the other companies. What they've had is a smaller decline in sales than the other of the big six companies, because we really shouldn't talk about the big three anymore. Those days are long gone. But among the big six, Ford had the best sales performance. They were only down 30%. So they still have very severe problems. And, you know, a big shock could push them over the brink. But everyone will be losing money, not just the Detroit Three.
What can you tell us, if anything, about lawmakers who want to urge the car companies to consider a pre-negotiated bankruptcy? Is that the way to go?
It may be a component that would allow the car companies to renege on their obligations to retirees. So it's something that has been used repeatedly in other industries, and that would shed a large cost burden that these companies face today. It wouldn't be sufficient, but it would certainly free up a large amount of cash. You know, it's a very sad thing to see that dilemma, that managers face that sort of dilemma. But we may end up with a national health care policy in the next couple of years. So this is one, you know, symptom of why that sort of system might be preferable to what we have today.
What about the talk I've also heard about those who advocate perhaps GM and Chrysler should merge? And while you don't want us to say the big three anymore, then essentially we'd have two.
Big five.
Big five.
The product lineup of Chrysler and General Motors overlaps. And so from a strategic standpoint, I don't see why that would bring any sort of advantage. Administratively, it's easier to deal with two companies than three. Politically, that might overcome the hurdle that Chrysler is currently a privately held company rather than a publicly traded company. But from the standpoint of the impact on the economy, who owns it really isn't relevant. Toyota has, 11, 12 plants in the U.S. now. And if they went under suddenly, that would cause tremendous problems as well, and from a public policy perspective, it would make good sense to ask what could we do to keep them running. So the merger proposal seems to me driven solely by the politics of handling a company that is currently privately held rather than publicly held.
We have many other callers, so let me see what Linda in Monroe wants to say. Hi, Linda, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Professor Smitka.
Good morning.
I don't think Congress should bail out anybody, particularly the investment bankers in New York, such as J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Goldman Sachs. They got us into this trouble in the first place by selling derivatives to the auto companies and other people. Now, the auto companies don't want to change management, and where's the money going to come from for the bailout? Don't keep borrowing from Social Security. Now, my question is, where do you think the government should get the money? Keep borrowing from Social Security or tax the hedge fund dealers? And if that isn't enough, put on a surcharge similar to what President Lyndon Johnson did during the Vietnam War, as well as Representative Obi proposed recently.
Yeah, well, we're not going to be able to go through all those different options, but...
But I can speak to one of them.
Okay.
Okay. Obviously, it would be nice to have avoided these problems to begin with, to have had a little bit tighter monetary policy, to have taken and regulated banks the way that the system had been set up, rather than, you know, allowing innovation without anyone watching it, perhaps to have said if we're going to go to war, we have to pay for it. But in the case of the auto industry, there's a very appropriate way to handle this, which would be to tax gasoline. one of the problems that General Motors is facing is that we are coming off of a decade of the lowest gasoline prices in U.S. history, adjusted for inflation. And as a result, Americans wanted bigger vehicles with more horsepower. Our energy policy consists of something called CAFE, Corporate Average Fuel Economy Requirements, and those are different for cars and trucks. And because of the limitations on fuel efficiency was much stricter for cars, then light trucks have easier standards. So if you wanted a big horsepower vehicle, you needed to go to an SUV or some sort of crossover vehicle. General Motors sensed that very early on, and they geared themselves up to give Americans the cars that they wanted. During the last decade, car ownership expanded by about 50 million vehicles on the road. And out of that, 35 million of that increment was in light trucks. So that was what Americans wanted, and the Detroit companies were the best at responding to that. Toyota and Nissan now have their large pickup trucks and V8 engines and so on, but you know, they didn't make it to catch that market. And now they're saying, wow, are we lucky that we were slow off the mark? So a gas tax would help stabilize the operating environment, the strategic environment, and provide money not only to help keep the industry going, but to fund ongoing R&D. Some of the congressional demands have been, gee, you should be forced to deliver high-mileage vehicles. But as long as gasoline is back at $1.20 a gallon locally, people are going to want their big vehicles. They're not going to want a smaller vehicle, which is less weight is an absolutely essential component of getting better fuel efficiency.
So when gas prices did spike, though, earlier this year and spiked to record levels, we did see the sales of SUVs and light trucks plummet. And in fact, I was led to believe that that was one of the primary reasons why the SUV plant, a GM plant in Janesville, Wisconsin, just south of here, was closed this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, at the moment, because of the recession, prices have dropped. You know, again, locally, they're under $1.50 a gallon now. I don't know. Yeah. State by state, those vary a bit because of local taxes and the distance to refineries,
yeah,
and so on.
We have a caller on this point, so let me go to Bob in Madison. Hi, Bob. You're on the air. Bob, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am. Yeah, that was a subject that I was going to touch on. Not too awfully long ago, the average individual person driving one car was paying probably $80 more a week just to go to and from work for one car, which is, you know, over $300 a month out of the working man's budget. Now, if you have two cars, that's double. And how are you going to pay for your house or even buy a new car? And I don't know of anybody in the country that did get an $80 a week raise in their pay.
I wish.
I think the inability of the government to step in and try and do something 2 years ago when the increase in gas was really, you know, going great guns. Nobody was doing anything. None of our public officials, our government officials, were doing anything.
Yeah. You know, and by and large, we were cheering them on their way because raising taxes on gasoline, which is what we would need to do to take and stabilize energy and to develop alternatives, is highly unpopular. We've had, you know, 8 years in which the primary campaign theme was no new taxes. That's fine if we are starting out with a balanced budget and without any long-run economic problems, but we've allowed many problems to fester and build. So energy is one of these. The energy tax that we've paid from the vast hike in prices, and that was being paid to people outside the U.S. So it was in effect a tax for bad policy, but it was one that we didn't even get to collect ourselves. So it's very sad.
We will check weather and then take more calls on the possible auto industry bailout. Our guest is Michael Smitka, professor of economics at Washington and Lee University in Virginia. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 8 o'clock, it's our Friday Week in Review. I'll be welcoming in Bill Leaders and Chris Lotto to talk with you about the news of the week coming up after 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Friday, December the 5th, and we are talking with a guest professor of economics, Michael Smitka, about the attempts to bail out the auto industry. And our next caller is Michael in Whitefish Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'd like to suggest that the mega banks, which presumably got the infusion of $700 billion from the government with an intent to have them loan it out, that they should be the lenders to the auto industry, at least on a provisional basis. So they've got all this money that they received from the government, and the presumed intent was that they should lend it out, but they've been hoarding it. Ask anybody who tried to get a loan recently, and they get stonewalled. So why doesn't the government put the screws to these big banks to help out the big three?
Hmm. What about that idea, Professor Smitka?
I think we'd be better off if we let banks try to improve their lending to the vast variety of businesses that they have the administrative capability to address. Throwing the money just at the big three is one way to finesse some of the congressional rules, perhaps, but Congress wouldn't be very happy about that. They want a direct say in where the money goes. So I think it's better to let the auto industry be addressed as an industry and proposals for that, which might get some attention paid to what might be done to allow the dealership network to be restructured, what might be done on the energy and vehicle efficiency side, and some other things that really are important areas for long-run public policy. So the crisis in the auto industry could be used to talk about some other fixes that need to be done and make sure that they stay on the table. And let banks do what they're best at, which is making lots of small loans.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any comment, Professor Smitka, on those who scratch their heads over why our government gave the banks $700 billion without batting an eye, hardly, and few strings attached, but are balking at putting out these loans to keep the car makers afloat?
Back in the earlier in the fall, we were really facing an incredible crisis in financial markets. I think if people reflect a bit, they can realize how much their lives are intertwined either directly with using credit or the businesses where they shop or work are tied into credit. And we really had the possibility that because of the interlinking of those markets, things would collapse. And the experience in the Asian financial crisis and elsewhere, when the markets collapsed in Thailand, it took less than one business day. So we really had that package thrown together literally over a weekend. It was not carefully thought out, but that's partly because there was no time to do that. So, but the legacy of that, the bad taste that that's left, for other industries and other problems that we face is quite unfortunate. So I think some sort of package was quite appropriate. The form that it ended up taking is not what, in retrospect, most people would like. Management was not necessarily thrown out. The government gave loans rather than taking an equity stake, many things. But the auto industry shouldn't be made to suffer for the problems that came from TARP. So, as I said at the beginning, I'm worried that the auto industry is going to be tarped and feathered because of it.
Our next caller is Tim in East Troy. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Last night I finished watching the movie Who Killed the Electric Car? And the take-home message from that movie was very clear, that GM and the other motor companies are just greedy. They had a perfectly good perfectly good electric car back then, and they removed it from the market and destroyed every one of them just so they could make more money selling Hummers and SUVs. It's all about greed, and I think if they don't bring back an electric car, they should get nothing. Same with the other auto companies who did the same thing during that period of time.
Electric cars are in the plans, aren't they, Professor Smitka?
Certainly. We have a company trying to launch one on a commercial basis out in California, Tesla, and it will come in at over $100,000. That, unfortunately, means that we would have an electric car, but it's not a solution to our problems. The technical difficulties turn out to be quite big. The claim that there was a viable car it's not true. You cannot take a car that would meet our current safety standards, that would have the driving range that we want, that could be recharged in the time frame that we need. That technology is gradually falling into place, but it's not there yet. And with 250 million vehicles on the road, it would take a long time to convert. But from an efficiency standpoint, I think that's the best way to go. I think hybrids, where you have two entire power plants in one vehicle, in the abstract sounds really silly. And it does impose real costs, both because you've got to pay for two power plants in the same vehicle and because it adds weight. So electric cars should be there. But the failure to have them isn't a conspiracy. It's because at $1.50 a gallon, the cost structure of turning on an electric vehicle means that no one will buy it.
Mike in Milwaukee emails, why would Chrysler and GM going down hurt Ford, as the UAW president said? Wouldn't less competition be better for Ford?
In the long run, Ford would love to have fewer competitors. Right now, though, the industry consists of the big six, the three Detroit firms and three Japanese firms, and the little eight, which is three additional Japanese producers, three German producers, and two Korean producers. So right now we've got 14 companies building cars in North America. Not having General Motors around, everyone would be saying, life's a little bit easier, but life won't be easier. Second of all, when you go to a car dealership, you're typically looking at Joe Smith's Ford, Joe Smith's Chrysler, Joe Smith's Toyota, all lined up on the same street. These are multi-brand franchises. Their finances, as it happens, are run out of the same bucket. So they're not set up as totally independent businesses with the same owner. They're really a single business with multiple stores. So General Motors going under is going to hurt Ford because it will hurt Ford dealerships across the U.S. It will, to some extent, hurt the reputation because Americans aren't particularly discriminating when they go out shopping, that this happens to be a Ford vehicle, this happens to be a GM. Right now, actually, I think GM has the better cars out of anyone. That aside. And the other problem is that they share suppliers. And these suppliers are sitting there with a very capital-intensive business. They have a staggering decline already in their revenues. And General Motors would be 20, 30, 40% additional revenue hit to many of these suppliers. If they go under, Ford goes under. So, and Toyota, for that matter, Honda. So the industry is interlinked in a way that is not obvious on the surface.
Yeah. Well, we only have a couple of minutes to go here. What happens if Congress doesn't approve what you called in the beginning a Band-Aid? What happens if this loan money is not approved?
I'm very much afraid that we would see the industry shut down within a couple months' time. It would take a while to get it restarted. And the impact of a shutdown that involves a million or more people losing their income overnight, when we're already in the midst of a fairly deep recession, is not something I want to try to work out the math. It would be a horrific impact on the economy.
Yeah. And if the Band-Aid is granted and the loan money is given, what has to be the first order of business to keep the industry viable? As you said, that's just a quick fix and not enough.
Ultimately, we need to get the economy going again. The amount of capacity in the industry, sales have been running at 16 million units, which I think is greater than what the long run would allow. But finance was really cheap, and so people were buying vehicles because from a monthly payment standpoint, vehicles were fairly cheap. They aren't going to be quite so cheap down the road. But you know, we had sales now at a bit over 10 million units, about 10.2 million if we just take current sales and project it out. I think that's going to be a little bit more than what things will come out. So going from 16 million sales down to 10 million or 9 million, you know, the industry is simply not viable, period, but that's true for industries across the U.S.
Well, you know, maybe we'll
down
have to...
Down and restarting is something that, you know, would be well nigh impossible.
Well, we will have to check back with you maybe later. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're quite welcome. Yeah.
Michael Smitka, professor of economics at Washington and Lee University in Virginia. Thanks to Rob Ferret and Bill Martins for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.